a few moments, we're going to have George come in and he'll give us our sports. But I want to get started with a interview. And we kind of started this a week ago when from the JSCO, I got to find my notes here as far as the events that are coming up. I know that we can cover those because Dr. Berkley Hudson has those right at his fingertips. But we were talking about the visit to the community by Jim Turner. And Jim Turner is here and he has a presentation to make later on today, a couple of them, three over the next 3 days. Mr. Turner, it's nice to meet you. How are you today?
Good, thanks.
Thank you for joining me. I asked you off the air because Dr. Hudson said this a week ago. You worked at KFRU.
KFRU is the biggest voice in Missouri.
What did you do for KFRU?
255 edition of the news.
You said that was an assignment? That was part of the J School assignment?
Yes, I was a radio journalist.
So what was that like? What do you remember about that experience?
Well, not much, except that I got two calls right as soon as I got off the air to give me the correct pronunciation of a word, and I had to learn that way.
That guy right there that just brought you that cup of coffee, he gets those same kinds of calls, and so do I. I mean, that's what people do. I mean, interacting with radio is to say.
I was surprised that a housewife would take her time out to call me and tell me how to talk.
It's one of the best things about KFRU is people that take their time out to say, you know what, you got this wrong, or I think it's this instead. Do you remember what the word was?
Posthumously.
Posthumously.
I said it posthumously.
That's a good number. It looks like that. You know, it looks like it should be posthumously.
Posthumously.
You went on from here, and tell us where your path went after you were in Columbia.
Well, on 3 days in June of 1952, I got graduated as a journalist, commissioned as a Marine, and married as a to a co-ed.
You did that in 3 days?
In 3 days.
That's a busy 3 day time period. And so where did you go as a Marine?
Virginia, California, Japan, Korea.
When did you become a lawyer?
After I got out of the Marines, I became a lawyer in 2.5 years of study at University of Colorado.
And from there, where did you work?
I went to the Justice Department in the Tax Division first, and then I left there after 3 or 4 years and went and practiced in Denver briefly. I'm from Colorado originally, and then having failed there, I went off to join the Civil Rights Division.
What led you to the Civil Rights Division? Was it just job opportunity, or was there something more going on?
Well, there's more to it. There's always a long story. In high school, beer and pretzels, whiskey straight, were the class of 48.
We didn't have a motto like that in my high school. I graduated the wrong time.
We had one. Unfortunately, it was probably more true than it should have been. But
so what led you to civil rights?
I entered a contest. I was in the debate club in high school and entered a contest on original orations. And mine was called Prejudice. And it was all about blacks and their problems in the United States. And I won the contest and went off to the Nationals and took sixth place. I'm not sure that in 1946 it was that popular a topic, but I won some honor anyway.
1946. We're going to pause now. George Young is coming in. He's going to do KFRU Sports. We'll come back right after that, and we'll talk more. Jim Turner and Berkley Hudson, our guests. And if you're listening a little while ago, you know in the studio I have Jim Turner. He's visiting this community after having gone to J school here and then gone on to a career as a civil rights attorney. And Dr. Berkley Hudson, who is a journalism professor at MU, chair of the Faculty Council's Diversity Enhancement Committee. Dr. Hudson, haven't greeted you yet. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Tell me again about bringing Jim Turner to the community.
Well, I met him last spring when he came here for an exhibit that I was hosting on historic photographs from Mississippi from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And he had read about it in the alumni newsletter and decided to come with his wife, Anita, across the country. And I don't think he'd been back here maybe for 50 years. And so it was great because he also had a reunion with Mike Middleton, and Mike had been a young lawyer in the Justice Department when Jim had been there for a number of years already.
So he will be, Mr. Turner is going to be speaking in three different places. Could you outline again where those are going to be and when?
Today he'll be in the law school at MU at 1 p.m. in room 5, which is downstairs in the law school, and that'll be from 1 to 2. And then tomorrow on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. in the journalism school at the Reynolds Journalism Institute in room 200, which is the Fred Smith Forum with the entrance there on 9th Street. And then on Thursday at 1 p.m. in the Page Library at Lincoln University, Mike Middleton will host us there. He's the interim president of Lincoln now, and he was previously the interim president of the UM system and then the deputy chancellor and also a law school professor at MU.
All of these are open to the public.
These are all free and open to the public, yes.
Jim Turner is in the studio with us. When you think of the presentations that you'll make, sir, and this is based on a book that you have written, Selma and the, is it Luizzo?
Luizzo.
Murder Trials. What comes to mind when you think back to that time in your career and that time in this country's history?
Well, that was the very first assignment I ever received as a civil rights lawyer. I had been in the tax division earlier, but this time I was in civil rights, and the march was going on in Selma, from Selma to Montgomery. On the last day of the march, Mrs. Liuzzo was shot by Klansmen. We knew that because one of the Klansmen in the car was an FBI informant. So we were able to make a quick arrest, and the President of the United States announced the arrest, and I was fussing in Washington because I had not yet got out of Washington. I'd only been there 2 weeks, and they said I was too young to go to the real action. Then John Doerr, the Assistant Attorney General, called and said, "Please come to Selma. There's been a shooting, and I want you to work on the case."
This woman was a white woman.
She was. She was a volunteer from Detroit who said she just had to help Dr. King after seeing the carnage on Bloody Sunday.
When you do something like this, are you aware at the moment of the tension that exists, or is it something you're more aware of when you look back on the situation?
Oh, I think you got the sense of tension right away. I walked in, and John showed me, he said, "I got to show you where everything is." And he says, "This white phone goes to the White House, and this phone goes to the Justice Department, and this phone goes there." And my breath was taken away, and he introduced me to the FBI people. He introduced me to others. And in the FBI office, there was none other than Roy Reed, who was my roommate in journalism school. Huh. At Three Squares Co-op, and Roy was working for the New York Times. And so the rest of the civil rights beat, he and I were fairly close together.
Summarize the outcomes of what you participated in then. In other words, trial results, I think you had favorable conviction, but not everything went well.
No, the first thing that happened was I was called back to Washington, and they said the state attorney general and the state governor have requested that they be allowed to go first because they can get a death penalty conviction. And I said, "In Alabama?" Mm-hmm. And they said, yes, we've always had that as our policy, and the attorney general has decided that that's what's going to happen. At their request, they tried murder case twice. First one was to a hung jury. The second was to an acquittal of the first shooter, a kid named Colley Leroy Wilkins. And after that, we brought the federal case, which we had indicted first, and before Judge Frank Johnson in Montgomery, we were able to get a fair jury and a conviction. He sentenced him to 10 years.
10 years. For the shooting death.
Yes, that's all. That's the maximum you could have been sentenced under that statute.
When you were entering the courthouse, were there people yelling at you? Were there people that would be upset and know what you were doing? Were there that kind of atmosphere?
Not really. The the courthouse was federal property, and Judge Johnson was in charge, and he kept it pretty calm.
When that was over, what'd you do after that? I mean, you started out with that was your first civil rights action for the department.
After that, I went on, and I was assigned to a section that dealt only with Mississippi and Louisiana. But when something happened like Selma, everybody got drawn into that. And I went back and started working on Mississippi and Louisiana, and then we reorganized in 1967. I went to the central section because we needed to get more folks in the north.
It wasn't just a southern problem.
No, and the first case I have was a voting case in Gary, Indiana. We, in 1 week, we put on a case and elected Mayor Richard Hatcher as the first northern mayor that was elected in the civil rights era.
What led you to write the book? Why did you feel it was necessary to write this book?
Well, I wanted to do two things. One, I wanted to explain. My son Jim and I went to hear President Obama in Selma give his speech on the 50th anniversary and of the Selma of Bloody Sunday. And that was very moving to me, and I started thinking about writing the book then. And then I thought if people only could understand where this all started and how it started and how the Klan was always excused from everything until this case came along, they would understand civil rights better. So that was our goal, and I hope we've achieved it.
Dr. Hudson, when you look, and again, you say, I see here like you're the chair of the Faculty Council's Diversity Enhancement Committee. When you read the book by Jim Turner and when you think about what his experiences are, and this is 60 years post that, what are your thoughts as far as what you would communicate to students who you touch and to a community?
Well, I would say it's, we're still in an era when the KKK and civil rights protests are making the news every day. And so I think it's important to look back to this other time, more than 50 years ago, and it can enrich our understanding about why the Selma prosecution matters and why voting rights matters and why racial understanding also matters.
Your students react to this? Are they you deal with people at the university who are very attuned to what's going on? Larger community sometimes slow to get a message.
Yeah, no, my students get this. Yeah. They understand the significance, regardless of their viewpoints. They understand the significance. I mean, we still have a keen awareness of what happened in Charlottesville last August, and I think our country has a keen awareness as well.
Mr. Turner, I'll have to let you go in a moment, but I'm just curious. You got any good story about Mike Middleton?
Well, I don't tell stories on our lawyers. Mike is a very fine gentleman.
He's had to step into some interesting roles here at the university.
He certainly has.
How close have you
watched him with great pride?
I wondered, how close have you watched what's happened over the last 2.5 years at MU?
Well, fairly close. My other roommate in college was a kid from Ferguson, Missouri.
Oh, really?
And,
wow.
I visited him. He had seven sisters, and I liked Grant, but I also liked all of the women around. But
Grant must have been your roommate.
Yes,
and
he was.
Then the women were his
sisters. He's no longer with us now. He crashed in an airplane. But
any perspective you could offer on the current scene politically, racially, civil rights, anything that you see that say, gosh, folks, learn this lesson?
Well, I think that the major lesson to be learned is that the Civil Rights Division, which started in 1957, it was formed in the first Civil Rights Act that was ever passed, modern Civil Rights Act. And there were 15 lawyers in the criminal division that were transferred, and they became the basis for the Civil Rights Division. That number is now 400 lawyers and 300 other people. So you have, plus the United States attorneys, their deputies, the FBI. You have a large commitment by the federal government to protect civil rights. And I think that everybody has to understand that as a given, including whoever is elected president and anything else.
Mm. Nice to meet you. Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Hanson.
You. And I would just point out that Democrat Jimmy Carter nominated Jim for the Presidential Distinguished Service Award, and that it was then later presented by President Ronald Reagan, a Republican.
Honored to talk to you, sir. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.
Jim Turner and also Berkeley Hudson. Again, Jim Turner's presentation, 1 o'clock this afternoon, School of Law, Room 5, 6:30 tomorrow at Reynolds Journalism Institute in Smith Forum 200, both of those in Columbia, free, and you're welcome to attend and hear what he has to say about the first modern civil rights convictions that go back to the mid-60s, and that would be at a killing of a woman who was helping those speak out about the injustices that they were facing. And then Thursday, March 8th, 1 o'clock in the afternoon at Lincoln University and the library there. Thank them for being with us today. This is KFRU.
It's 1:41 Mountain Time in Roswell, New Mexico. And you're listening to Night Call. From New York City, I'm Emily Yoshida.
And from Los Angeles, I am Tess Lynch.
And Molly Lambert.
And this is Night Call, a weekly podcast to keep you company during those strange days and lonely nights. Some of you may know us from our previous podcast that we did at Grantland, RIP.
Listen to Night Call every Monday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite shows.